is with Mrs. Bernice Brightwell, a retired librarian at the University of Illinois. Mrs. Brightwell is the daughter of the late Albert R. Lee, who was the chief clerk at the University of Illinois. Mrs. Brightwell was born here in Champaign on June 24, 1907. This interview is being conducted on July 18, 1983, at 1207 West Beslin, Urbana. The interviewers are Patrick Tyler and Melinda Roundtree, representing the Urbana Free Library Archives Department.
It's at 605 North Walnut Street in Champaign. I was the only daughter of Albert R. and Maud McCurdy Lee. I had two brothers, the eldest being Albert M., the youngest being Maurice W. My childhood was uneventful. Back in those days, in the late teens and early 20s, I received my schooling at a little school about 2.5 blocks from my home, which was called Gregory School. At that time, Negro children weren't too well respected. I don't know that there were a lot of little, the black children would always play together and be together, and then the white children would always play together. But as I grew a little older, I don't know, it seems to me I became a little more accepted, because when I entered the sixth grade, the teacher of the sixth grade was the principal of the school, and she sort of took me as her pet. I was tiny, and I read well, and she liked for me to read to the class. After school, when we'd go home, we'd hear such remarks as, "I see a dark cloud, must be going to rain. I see dark clouds coming down the street." That's just the way prejudice was back in those days. Well, we disregarded, we didn't pay any attention to it. And we'd go along. Finally, my days ended at Gregory, and I was at that time, they didn't have junior high schools. They had a school that was sort of a bridge between, like the junior high school. You went to 7th and 8th grades there, and when you finished there, then you went to high school. So it was called Central School. They have a historical marker there now. It's where the old post office used to be, across from Robeson's. The post office was on the corner, and Central School was there, I think, where they have this historical marker. It was the first old high school, too. My father, I think, went to high school there. It says on the historical marker, I think it says Champaign High School. Then I went on to high school. I finished the 7th and 8th grades at Central. Then I went on to high school, which had 4 years of a college preparatory course. My father insisted that I take Latin, because he said that was a basic language. And since I always wanted to teach English, and that was a very good background study, so I took that Latin all my two years that was required for a foreign language. Then when I finished high school, do you want dates?
Yes. I was wondering what date you were born.
I was born June 24th, 1907.
And you graduated from high school?
I guess, let me see, I don't know what date that would be. Anyway, I graduated at the age of 17. I don't recall what date that would be, though. Let me see. 8 years. That's what I say, my memory. About 19, well, it was around 1925, I think, say. Uh-huh. Around 1925. And then I went on to college. At that time, my father, of course, was working in the president's office at the University of Illinois. And this was very, made it easy for me because they helped me register all of the various ones that worked in the office. So, and then I knew quite a bit about the university already, as I visited my father quite often in the president's office. So it wasn't hard for me to become adjusted to university as it is for most students. I knew most of the buildings and all that sort of thing. And registration proved to be very easy because I knew what my major was going to be. So I took my first year courses in the proper order, you know, as a prerequisite for those that would have to follow. And in general, I went through college very smoothly, no difficulties. I recall the only course I flunked it twice, and that was swimming. And until today, I don't like swimming. I flunked swimming twice. That's the only two courses that I know of that I, rather, the only course that I know of that I failed. And then I finished, got my bachelor's degree in education in, let's see, 1930. And then I went away to teach at Tennessee State University, Nashville, Tennessee. My brother also went there. He was teaching at Crispus Attucks High School in Indianapolis. But since I was so young and immature, the president of the college thought it would be wise if my brother would go also. He persuaded him to take a position there also as head of the Department of Industrial Arts. So I taught there a short while. I didn't like teaching. It was disappointing to me. And my mother's health wasn't too well, so I came back here. And the most important work that I had was at Chanute Air Force Base in the personnel office, military personnel office, and working at the University of Illinois Library for 25 years. I didn't have library science. At that time, when I started working in the library, they didn't have very many Negroes in the library. When I left, by that time, they were hiring them. But I ran into so many difficulties in getting good positions, the positions that I should have had according to my training. I ran into difficulties because back in those days, there was so much prejudice. You had to go south to teach. You had to go south to do anything worthwhile, really. Now, when I came back, after I came back from teaching in Nashville, I went back and got my master's degree, got a Master of Arts in English. And really, it didn't do me very much good. I look around, see how these children can get jobs now without all that training even, you know, and get much better jobs than I got with all that training. So it was very difficult for us. You don't realize it. How those prejudices hurt us young people in those days. We did well if we got a job in domestic service, really. So I took little jobs. I was glad to get any sort of job. I took little jobs like stock girl at Robeson's store, department store, and little jobs like that in between times until I could get a worthwhile job like the one at Chanute Air Force Base. And then the one at the library. And I missed quite a number of years because my parents were both ill and I had to look out after them and take care of their home and all that sort of thing. So I didn't have a chance to do very much other than that for quite several years.
Could you tell us a little bit about your parents?
My parents? Yes, my mother was just a domestic person. She just loved to do housework. And my father, I'm sure you read of all of this if you read anything about him. He was a prominent Mason, 33rd degree Mason, and he was head of the Knights Templars of this country. They call it the International Conference of Knights Templars. He's changed it to the, what did he call that? Anyway, he changed the name of it. I can't think of it might come to me. Anyway, he was the head of masonry. And then he was a church worker also. He was president of Bethel AME Choir for about 35 or 40 years. And he was a district superintendent of Bethel AME Sunday School for equally as long a period. And so he's interested in the university in that he did so much for the black students. When the students would come here to register, they knew automatically to go to Mr. Lee because some others had told them about him. And so many of them weren't able to pay their fees right away so they could register. My dad would go to the main offices and help them defer their fees and pay later when they could afford it. And he was always looking out for Negro students in getting them positions when they finished and in trying to encourage them in athletics. They didn't want Negroes on the football team in those days. And a young man that stayed at our house, he could pass for white, but they knew he was Negro, so they made it hard for him. He was high-tempered, and Coach Zupke knew this, and he would play on those things so that he could be dismissed from the team. My father fought valiantly for athletics. That was one of his main fights. I was trying to remember the coach. I have read some of the letters he wrote to him interceding for black students. And finally, gradually, they put them on the track team, on the football team, and basketball. Eventually, it took time, but my father, before he passed, he saw the realization of his dreams. I mean, some were playing, because I used to date a fellow that was a track star on the track team. And then my father would always encourage them to go to church. They used to have a meeting they called the Lyceum, and it was for the community and the students. And they would meet on a certain night every month and have a paper that about the students, you know, sort of little intimate things about the students. And this was a way he won the students over to coming to church. Then he would put them in the choir, singing in the choir. He was always, that was uppermost in his mind, was promoting various things that might help Negro students live a better life here. I recall way back when my brother was in college, I was still in high school, they used to kid about a place they called the Beanery. That's the only place they could go on the campus and eat. And it wasn't exactly on the campus, it was on the corner of Wright and Stoughton, I believe. Anyway, that's the only place they could go eat. Then when I was in school, during lunch hour, if I didn't want to go home, the only place that we had to go was to the women's building and lie down. They didn't have a Illini Union building then. And when I was in school, the place where the Illini building is now was an old, old, dilapidated building called University Hall. And this was the main building. Most of the classes, your English classes and so forth, usually had in there, had it in that building. And my father said it used to house all the administrative offices and all that. And then the building there on the corner that's called the Mathematics Building, it used to be the old library, I believe. And my dad has bits, if I could find them, telling about some of those old buildings, you know, the library, when it was located there on the corner of Wright and well, it wasn't really on the corner, it sits back. It's on Wright Street, actually. And let's see what else I remember. Got me stirred up. Now, just, say about a couple of years ago, I can't think of the man that's an archives librarian. He sent me this faculty directory. Now, this is what the faculty, you've seen the faculty directory now, haven't you? How thick and big it is. And this was back in 1914, I believe. Yeah, 1914. This is the note that I can find his name on here. Mr. Bridgeford. This is a note he sent to me. And this is this is the faculty. See how few people worked there then? And now the faculty about that big.
Well, this belonged to your father.
Yeah, that book belonged to my dad. That was among his possessions. Oh, I never did tell you that I did join a sorority, too. Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority. I belonged to Gamma chapter when I was undergraduate, and they didn't have a graduate chapter here for so long, and I guess I was one of the ones that was responsible for Epsilon Omega being here now. I was, at that time we had so few members that I had to double both as epistolist and grammatist, recording secretary and corresponding secretary. I had to do both. So I wrote a letter in to our regional director in Chicago. Soror Wilkins, I believe, was our regional director then. Soror Wilkins. And at first she refused. She said she didn't think there were enough black women on this campus to have both a graduate and undergraduate chapter. I wrote her back the second time. The second time she granted us our charter. So I was honored about twice by my chapter here, Epsilon Epsilon Omega, for being a 50-year member. I have a pin they presented me, also a little locket they presented me. So I was honored twice, actually. So I have been a sorority sister for quite a number of years. I'm not very active now. I go occasionally and I attend the various functions that we have. I enjoy being with them, with my sorors. And I didn't want to leave that out. I was just about to forget that. Now, you want to know a little bit more about my brothers.
Yes.
My brother Albert, the oldest boy, he didn't see fit to go into college, but he got a good position as carrying mail on the campus. And my brother Maurice went to school. He was taking electrical engineering. He felt that he wanted to get a little experience, so he stopped school and went to Chicago and he got a good job, you know, doing this type of work. But they found out he was a Negro and then they tried to get rid of him. So then he came back to school. The first time he was in electrical engineering. The second time he came back, he saw the Negro didn't have much chance there in electrical engineering, so he took industrial arts, and that's when he finished in industrial arts at the University of Illinois. And he married an Oklahoma girl. Her father owned a lot of oil lands there, so he was in control of a bank in a little town called Boley, Oklahoma. So my brother went there to work in his father-in-law's bank. It really wasn't his bank, but I mean he was a controllership. And it's the same bank that the Pretty Boy Floyd gangsters held up. And they killed the president, the Negro. They killed him. But those Negroes got their guns out and they really went. And they killed one of his best men. It was the one that they caught in Chicago? It wasn't him. It was one of his best men, Pretty Boy Floyd.
Yep.
I can't think of his name. I have a book in here. If you excuse me for a minute, I'll see if I can find it. It's about the story of Boley. Tells all about that robbery, and the man that wrote it is a native of Boley. It's an interesting town. They have their own, everything is run by Negro. No whites, they don't allow, whites can come in and go out, but this is their rodeo they have each year, Boley Rodeo. And this, I'm getting a little ahead of my story, but this, my brother, Maurice's son had a daughter that was Miss Black America. Well, she was first runner-up to Miss Black America. Well, speaking of my brother, he climbed very fast there in Boley. He taught school for a while, then he became official of the bank, and then he invented this cooker. No doubt heard of it. I can never think of the name of the cooker. You should know that, and I can never think of the name of it. My husband knows it. I'll soon tell you.
Okay.
Programs and so forth on the air about it. It's called Smoke Aroma.
Yeah.
His cooker, he invented that. Now, he not only invented it, but he did it. He manufactured it himself right there in Boley. That gave a lot of the black people there work. A lot of those farmers and weren't doing so well farming worked in his factory. And now the boys are carrying on, his two sons, Maurice the older and Forrest Albert the younger. They're carrying on that business. They go all around the country. My nephew was on TV, Dan Rather's show.
Yeah.
Did you see that? Oh, he was on Dan Rather's. It's some kind of difficulty they're having, and I don't understand it. You know, women. I don't. Anyway, they're solving it, whatever it was. And they had him on for about 10 minutes or so on the national hookup with Dan Rather. And I'll show you after a while the picture of the family. Life magazine ran a picture and a story about Boley and the Smoke Aroma cooker. Now, the first thing my brother invented was a little small cooker. You can cook a hamburger in 5 minutes or 5 seconds or something like that. Now they have them on the market.
Yeah,
I said, well, my brother had invented that several years ago. Because he passed, let's see, I think it was 70, my brother passed, 71 or 2, someplace along there. And now my other brother, I think I told you what he did. He carried me along the campus. And it was just the three of us. Is there anything else now that you want to ask about? Let's see if I can.
How about life in Champaign-Urbana during the war, in the Second World War?
Second World War.
And, even before the war, how about the Depression?
The Depression, oh yes, that hit pretty hard. But Dad still had his job over at the university in the president's office. But you know, the salaries were so low back in those days. Of course, food was low too. You could get a loaf of bread for a quarter or something like that and get a hamburger, a dime one or a nickel one. So, of course, the prices were down, but his salary wasn't very much, but he kept on through all right because he still maintained his office. Now, what my dad, they named him chief clerk, but he was really administrative secretary is what he was, because he was a ghostwriter for the president. I read some of the speeches and things he wrote, like he wrote the greetings that you see in the athletic programs, you know, that you souvenir programs, like the greetings and like that. Papa, my dad wrote some of those, I think. He was a ghostwriter. Now they would probably call him administrative secretary, you know, or assistant, wouldn't they? Administrative assistant. But in those days, they just called him chief clerk in the president's office. So I don't know what else now I could tell you about.
So, how was the black community, you know, how did the Depression affect the black community?
I think people here did pretty well. The group that I went around with, like the church people that and our neighbors, so many of our neighbors belonged to either Bethel Church or Baptist, Salem Baptist. Those were the two largest Negro churches here, Salem Baptist and African Methodist Episcopal, Bethel. Mm-hmm. Those were the two main churches here. And I think most of the people seem to fare pretty well. I mean, you know, like my uncle now in Chicago, he was an architect. Well, he suffered terribly. During that time, he was planning the Pythian Temple, and they couldn't go through with it. The plans all fell down, and so he was left high and dry. He suffered now in Chicago, but here in this little community, they didn't suffer too badly, I don't think. It might have been some of them out of work. But the domestic, I'll tell you, most of our people around here did domestic work anyway, and you know, that didn't affect that too much. They still had to have cooks and housekeepers. Mm-hmm. And so many of our people work on campus as maids, you know, and cooks in fraternities and sororities. So, I mean, I don't think it affected them too much. It did affect them, I'm sure, but I don't think too badly. And the students, at that time, we didn't have very many Negro students here during that period. And they had a pretty hard way to go. Some of them had, most of the black students worked in the sororities and fraternities as waiters and worked at Champaign Country Club and Urbana Country Club, you know, as waiters. And I know a friend, I wish I could show you his book now, a friend of mine who was a coach at Gary High School and was responsible for several of the outstanding football players sent down here to Coach Ray Elliott's team. He finished with Coach Ray Elliott and they were close friends. So he'd sent him a lot of good fellas down here from Gary. And then he was in the industrial, physical education department here. His name is John D. Smith. Have you heard of him? He was here for about three or four years, I guess. I don't know just what his title was. I guess he was assistant to some of the coaches or teaching physical education or something like that. And he's written a book. I had 5 copies, which I was unable to sell, so I just sent them back Saturday. The young lady was going up there and she took the books back. Now, what else did you want to know? I'm wandering off.
That's okay. During the war, after the Depression, you know, how did the war affect Champaign and the community?
Well, I don't know that it affected Champaign Urbana too much. A lot of people were unemployed just as they are now. Unemployment, I guess, was the biggest problem. People seemed to make it through okay. That's back when I was young and didn't pay any attention to those things. So you can't get so much out of me there back in those days because I was so young I wasn't paying any attention to any depression. All I knew is I lived all right and some others probably were suffering. But like I say, my dad with his little salary wasn't much, but we still were able to go on pretty well.
Can you remember any outstanding things that happened, you know, as you was growing up, you know, here in the community?
Probably there were a lot of things that don't come to my mind now. Probably a lot of things that, well, would you like to know about a sorority? Well, we didn't have a house and we finally got a house. My father stood back of that, too, and helped them raise the money. So we finally got a sorority house. Because when I joined, they stayed together and banded together in some rooming house someplace. But they finally got a house of their own on Stoughton Street in Urbana. And the Omega Sci-Fi, they had a house right next to them. Now, it's difficult for me to know too much, like I say, about the other part of the community because I was so much of the school, you know, educational. The church seemed to do all right. I don't really differ financially. No, they seemed to do all right.
How about the church involvement with the community? Did they interact a lot with the community then?
Yes. Now, what do you mean? Now, maybe
say for instance, okay, now, you know, Dr. Young, what's happening with him and the school board?
Things like that.
The church is not supporting him.
Oh.
You know, getting money.
Now, Mr. Thomas Taylor would be able to tell you more about that because he taught himself, you know, and he was one of the heads in Urbana. vice principal or something, so he could tell you more about that. Have you been to interview him?
I called
Taylor Thomas.
He told me to call him.
Now, he can give you better than I can about that, about the educational part. Yeah, he can help you better than I can with that. I think I just know generally, but he could probably go into it more.
Maybe any other ways helping the people in the community, you know, the families. I mean, you know, other than educational community, you know, people who can't get food, you know, maybe churches, you know, gave them food or something like that, you know, any kind.
Yeah. Well, the churches have a program now, you know, to see that people get food through the Missionary Society. They have it pretty well organized now. And you're supposed to bring canned foods and so forth like that, and it's distributed. And the sorority does a lot that way, too. But there is a group of church now that's responsible for seeing that the food is distributed among the poor.
Did they do it in the past?
I don't recall their doing so much in the past. I recall our church had quite a bit to do with the recreation of the blacks. We had a park, a playground. Ruth Hines.
Yeah, we heard.
Now she can tell you lots. She could have. She could have. Beg pardon.
She did a tape. Well, the Douglas Library. Uh-huh. They were doing tapes on black members of the community, and they had one on her, and we heard it.
She could give you a lot more information than I can because she was older, and she was in the community more than I was. I was, like I say, I used to be around the sorority kids all the time. I didn't get around town, you know, visiting like I should have, the church and the sorority, between those two. So, but Miss Hines could give you a good picture of all of the community better than I can.
She spoke about the sorority, you know, when they first got a house.
My father helped them to get a house.
Do you know Blanche Harris?
Yes, I know her.
The nursing home, Van Nursing Home?
Yes, I know her.
Mm-hmm. I read something about her in the archives department.
Did
and
you?
And it said that she was former editor of a black newspaper.
Yes, Mr. Harris, her husband, edited a newspaper here. I remember that. I'm trying to think of the name of the paper. I can't think of the name of it. What was that called? Her husband was from Danville. He did edit a paper.
He was the editor.
Well, she, co-editors. Okay. I would say husband and wife. I think she could give you a lot more information than I could. And then she was out in the community more than I was.
But could you tell us a little bit about some of the stuff that the newspaper published? What kind of things did they publish?
You mean all
articles?
Oh, I remember back in the older days, they all used to always say so-and-so colored. Did so-and-so. They always had to mention the fact that it was colored, whereas if they didn't say colored, you assume that they were white. That's one thing I remember that was outstanding, and they were always trying to paint Negroes black, because this lady lived next door to me since I've lived over here. She's dead now, but she'd always say, "Did you read about that collared woman in the newspaper?" You know, Negro woman shot her husband or something like that. She'd always bring that up. Collared people, she's always saying. That term's been out. That in the library, they did, Negro was a word. They didn't. It used to be colored, and you can see where it's marked out. There was a lot of prejudice here in this community. That's why most Negroes live north and east of University Avenue. North and east, you'll find most of the Negroes. Some of them have bought homes recently, some that are on faculty and all that. They have new homes out in these new additions. But I'd say the majority of black people live out in the community east and north of University Avenue. That's what they call the east side or the north end. And that's where they always look for crime, you know, always in the east end of town or north end, they call it.
How was crime when you was growing up?
Well, it was quite a bit of it, but it wasn't so cold and like it is now. There were some rape cases, but you didn't read of as many rape cases as you read of now. And drunken driving cases, there were always, there's always been that, some, a lot of arrests for that. But you didn't read of these horrible crimes, like this girl, the Orchard Downs, killing her two children, and you didn't read of things like that very much. But it's always been quite a bit of crime. Then there's so many dope or drug-related crimes now. Although they've used drugs way from way back in ancient times, but it didn't seem to be so prevalent as it is now, especially among our people, blacks. And these, what do they call these stores where they have these pornographic stores, stores and things like they had one here, over here, right here on the corner, and Negroes, bought. And I noticed that he's gone, they've run him clear out of business now. We didn't read of things like that. It probably was going on, pornography, but not like it is now. And you didn't read, now like these, well, they call them hookers. Prostitutes, they had house. I know of one. Mary Strother's had one on First Street on the corner of First and Hill, I believe it is. And she was arrested for killing a University of Illinois student. He came to her house after hours, and she really had a right. He kept banging on her door, and she shot at him and hit him. And she had to go to prison for that several years. But I only know of the one house of prostitution then. You didn't see, it wasn't so much of our people in prostitution as it is now. I mean, like that Root case. Yeah. I mean, you didn't hear of Negroes being involved in that sort of thing back in those days. They, like I say, they had prostitution, but you knew there were these two houses. The mother and the daughter, when the mother died, the mother, the daughter carried on. And but you didn't hear so much of it, Negroes being involved, you know, as you do now. I don't think.
What would you say the problem is now that, you know, Negroes aren't?
The Negroes are involved more now? I don't know. It seems to me it's parental. It's parents don't treat their children right, and then the children want to get out from home, and the only way they can make a dollar is to get out and be a prostitute. You know, become a prostitute. I think that's the thing now. Mothers don't care for their children like they used to. And when I was coming along, we didn't get out from our parents till we got married. We didn't go into apartments like these kids do now. I never left my home until I was married. And then, so, but these kids leave home and they, you know, try to make it by themselves, and they just can't make it by themselves out there now with the cost of living being as it is now. I think that accounts for quite a bit of prostitution among blacks. So many of them, I had to get out from home. They got to make a way some way, and it's the only way they know how. And so many of them don't go on through school. If they now, there's opportunities for blacks if they go through school. As a matter of fact, when they finish high school, there's some opportunities. And of course, I know jobs are scarce now, but I think they do have a little bit more opportunities than we had. Because like I say, I couldn't get a decent job here in my own hometown where I had grown up. Couldn't get a decent job.
Were there ever a time you know how it was in the South when blacks went to a place, they had to sit, you know, in different
sections. Oh, yes. Yes, they were segregated, yes, in the Rialto Theater and the Orpheum and the Virginia were the three best theaters here at that time. And I remember you had to sit up in, we call it Jim Crow Row upstairs in the Rialto Theater. And in the Orpheum, you had to sit back in one little section. And the Virginia had to sit up in the balcony. Yes. Because they had, youngsters had a fight one night about that. Three black boys, I don't know, they forced their way in and sat where they wanted to. Yeah. Segregation was real bad here. I mean, for a northern town.
Can you remember, was there any restaurants that was
there? There were no restaurants available. I mean, like I say, even for the students, they had no restaurants available. They just started opening those things up, you know, within later years. There for a time there wasn't any place we could go. So we knew a Negro man had a little place in north part of Champaign near us called the Idle Inn, and all of us kids on Sunday, we had no place to go. We'd go there and he'd serve soft drinks and little sandwiches and things of that sort. But we had no place to go, and really, there were no restaurants available to us. And not on campus, like you can go on campus now and eat at the Illini Union. We had nothing like that. We had no place to go. My mother used to feed a lot of students. They were hungry. This young man I was telling you about, the coach from Gary, he used to call my mother Mom. He said, us from the Kappa House always knew where to go on Sunday afternoon. We'd go to Mom's and she'd have those big, fat, hot rolls of hers, and she'd always knew we were hungry and say, sit down and eat, boys. I know you're hungry. But see, they had no restaurants or anything to go to, and then most of them didn't have much money to spend. They didn't have money to spend. Their parents were putting them through school, or else they were trying to work their way. They didn't have the money.
What were the costs then of going to school, tuition?
Well, tuition, I think it was around $100 a semester, I think, when I was going. I don't know much about that because Dad always put in the bill. And I think it was around $100 a semester.
I mean,
the straight fee.
Okay.
Matriculation fee.
About your sorority, the AK sorority?
Mm-hmm.
Do y'all do educational things for, you know, black students?
Yes.
Now, and they're doing things.
Yeah, we have this salad students. Bowl, and we have this dinner dance every year. Now, we just had the salad bowl in July, and we raised some money for that, and we give them scholarships. Did you?
Yes, ma'am.
Good for you. You just finished high school recently?
Two years ago.
Really? Are you in college now?
Yes, ma'am. I go to school in Mississippi.
Big pardon?
Mississippi.
Oh, you go to Mississippi? College. Oh, uh-huh. That's nice. Are you in school now?
Nah, I graduated. Actually, I was at Parkland a couple of years.
Oh, you were at Parkland. I mean, see, now, they even have Parkland now. You know, they needed a... You need to go to a school like that because it's such a major change going right from high school to the university. If I hadn't had the advantages of my father being over there, it would have been most difficult for me. As a matter of fact, it was difficult as it was, you know, the sudden change from high school to... I think a Parkland College, a junior college, is really needed. I think you can kind of get a foothold there and then go on to university, get your degree. But Parkland offers almost anything now. I don't see any necessity of going to university. I mean, if you start in Parkland, you can just get anything you want.
I was interested in what year you got married and met your husband. How did you meet him?
Oh, yes. My first husband I married in Chicago. I didn't have a wedding. It was just, we just got married, that's all. Well, my first husband and I separated after a year. We were both young, didn't know what we were doing. But the husband I'm with now, I married him in 1946, just before I lost my mother. She passed three months after we were married. Married a nice young man. When I was working at Chanute Air Force Base, I said I was working in the military personnel office. I met my husband up there. He was from Ohio. And he comes from three of the oldest Negro families in Ohio. This year, July, I mean, so I have that. I hope I have that. Yes. This is their 93rd annual family reunion. And it's all organized. You can see how well it's organized. Now, he's in arms. We went to the 90th, and I think we were at the 91st. But we're not going to go this year at the 93rd. Comes from fine family, three of the oldest families in Ohio. Negro, black families, I mean. So I met him at Chanute Air Force Base and we married in 1946. We've been married 36 years, soon be 37 years. It is 37, it goes so fast. Yes. And he's with the Illini Pest Control Company. My father got him a job there. The manager of the pest control company called and wanted to hire a Negro. He hadn't hired any Negroes, and he wanted to hire a Negro. And my father said, well, it so happens that my son-in-law is available. So he's been working for the pest control. That was in 1947 or so. He's been working there ever since. Illini Pest Control.
Did you know Maddie Birch?
Miss Birch? Yes.
Did she die? Do you know?
I don't believe so. Oh. The last time I talked with her daughter, Grace, I don't think she's dead. I must talk to Grace. Her mind kind of wavers, Grace told me. But she's still living.
Yeah, I was reading about her, too, and about her family background. Her grandfather founded Mount Bayou. Mississippi.
Interesting. Well, this might be interesting to tell you too. My uncle lived in Chicago, was the architect. He finished here at Illinois and got his master's degree here and planned some of that building. I think that church building, I think they've torn it down. I used to be across from University High School. That was his project that he planned for his master's degree. Well, this is an interesting point, though. He taught down at Tuskegee Institute when Booker T. Washington was living. Mm. Yeah, he taught there before he went to practice architecture. He taught at first. And then he planned those bathhouses down in Arkansas. Is it Little Rock or Hot Springs? Hot Springs. No, he planned the bathhouses there. So that's interesting to note. And in Chicago, he planned the Ida B. Wells housing project, the first Negro housing project in Chicago.
You know, Mrs. Ransom?
Mildred Ransom.
Principal of Yankee Ridge?
I think I know. Yes, I think I know.
She said her family was one of the first black,
to live in
the
Ida B. Wells. Uh-huh, yeah. Well, my uncle planned those. And he started the Pythian Temple, you know, and they had the Depression, and his money was sunk.
Could you tell us a little bit about your husband, Mr. Brightwell?
Well,
a little bit more about him.
There's much to tell about him. He's quiet and very quiet, and he loves to pitch horseshoe. He has several trophies, which I'll show you in here. He belongs to Champaign-Urbana Horseshoe Club, and then he belongs to what they call a Thursday night club. Dinner club. The fellas go every month to a different restaurant. And it's a lot of the outstanding men of the town belong to it. Like, who's Urban League? I can't think of his name.
Barstow.
Barstow and different ones like that. And our outstanding athlete lost his job as a coach at Urbana High School.
Sure.
J.C. Carroll, and he did belong. excuse me, this is getting away from, what did happen to him now? You go ahead with your question.
I was going to say, I was reading an article in the library on your husband.
On my husband?
Yeah, Mr. Brightwell. It was about this garage that you was building.
Oh, let me tell you about all that then. Oh, he built all of this. Our house ended. Let me. I'm always glad to show you this. Our house ended. And this window was here, and we looked out into the backyard. And he planned all this himself. He planned this and did most of the work. He had one helper, and then we had to have somebody to put up the, you know, the main, build it up. And then he did most all the work in here. Uh-huh. Yeah. And when we first bought this house, it had this little front room and a little dining room here. We tore all that out when we first moved in here. Yeah.
You know, Arik was talking about the neighbor complaining about the house.
Yes, these people next door, the woman that I said always talking about collared people, she's dead now. Bless her heart. They did all kinds of complaining because they were jealous. That was it. They just didn't want to see us have better, that collared people shouldn't have things that nice. And they took it up with the, I don't know where you go, wherever you go to complain about building, because the building inspector came out here and I showed him the permit. I said, we had the permit. What are you coming out here for? Made me so mad because my husband's mother had passed away and he had gone to California, you know. And I said, what are you out here bothering me for? I don't. Yeah, they complain. They try to give us all kinds of trouble. And when we poured the concrete with a drive out there, they try to complain and said we were on their property line. We said, have you had your property surveyed? We've had our survey. The man surveyed it and he told us, said, these Negroes on this side and this white people on this side, said they gave me a lot of trouble trying to find out where the line was, and said I told them you pay $50 and you can find out. Yeah. Oh yeah, they gave us all kinds of trouble.
How about your other neighbors? Has Reverend Williamson always been your neighbor?
Yes, down? Ever since we moved here he's been down there. Mm-hmm. And the people next door, I don't know them very well. Mother and her mother, and they have some children. They're very nice people. Seem very quiet. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I don't know so many. The name is Reverend Williamson. I know them. They can't, you know, and they fixed it up beautiful like they have it now. It's beautiful. Kelkers, you know,
they're
the
Kelkers.
No, they're not here. They went back.
East
yeah, they used to live on East Street. They went back to Florida. His
right.
Home was in Florida.
Their daughter, Mrs. Kelker, she's a teacher at King School.
Yeah,
she's been my teacher in fourth grade.
Was she? Mm-hmm. Oh, did you go here to?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you? Uh-huh.
Kindergarten, Mrs. Kelker.
Used to call it the Hayes School.
Yeah.
When you were going, or did they?
It was still King.
It was King when you went. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It was just recently built when we started.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right.
You know Mr. Jordan, Sandy Jordan?
Yeah, Sandy.
He said he went there too.
Yeah, he was a janitor, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I used to work in those elections up there, you know, school board elections. I used to work up there, and then I got to see the school more that way than any other way. Now, you see, when she came along, she could get a good job, Ozella, teaching. I couldn't get it back when I finished.
What kind of things do you like to do? What are your interests?
My interests?
You like to read?
I love to read.
What kind of things do you read?
I like to read heavy stuff, but for fun, I like to read mysteries. I like mystery stories. I just love to read mystery stories. And I like books like Roots, and Forever Amber, I read that, and all those masterpieces, modern masterpieces. Of course, I had to read a whole lot in English, you know, courses.
Yeah.
The slave, and you had better not vote Democrat ticket. You better vote Republican.
That comes back then.
And my parents taught me this too. You see, he taught them, and they taught me. So we always voted Republican, always. And things here are usually run by mostly Republican. There was that Crane, you know, he's Republican representative.
How about during the '60s, when John F. Kennedy got shot and Martin Luther King?
I think a lot of people turned out to be Democrats when Kennedy ran. I really do. I think a lot of people, because they liked him as a man. I think he changed a lot of people's minds. I think a lot of people probably went over to the Democratic Party then. At least I'm speaking for myself, and I think a lot of others did too. I'm not much of a politician. I'm not much on politics. I know it's important, and I vote because I feel that we have the right to vote, and we're given that right, and we should use it. I do believe that.
How about, like, during the civil rights movement with Martin Luther King, how did the community react?
I don't really know what their reaction was. Well, I think as far as NAACP and all that around here, you know, I think that they try to make people cognizant of the fact that it was important, politics was important, and they should vote. Because a lot of Negroes just don't go vote. They just say, oh, we're not going to get anything anyway, so I just might as well not vote. So I think that they became more aware of the fact that they should be a part of things and they should vote. I think this stimulated the Negro to voting more than they had been in the past.
How did the civil rights movement affect you in your own personal life?
Well, It didn't affect me so much because I was already secure and had my position. If it had come earlier, it would have done me some good, but as it was, I already had about time for me to leave. Now they've come offering me some good positions, better positions, about time for me to retire. Come for an interview over to the personnel, University of Illinois personnel office. And it was too late then. See, now I could have climbed upward and onward, but it was too late for me then. See, this came too late for me.
What did you want
to
do?
But I'm glad to cooperate for the ones coming on now, you know, for our people that are coming on now.
When you mastered in English, you know, what did you want to do? How did you want to use that in your career?
I really wanted to teach English, but if now that I know the television, all that sort of thing is so popular now, I would have gone into a different field. They call it journalism now. They don't call it that. Now I would have gone into journalism. Do they still call it journalism?
Yes, I'm majoring in English and journalism.
Well, that's what I would have gone into, but you see, back in those days, it wasn't needed like it is now. I would have preferred that to teaching. I found out I didn't care much about teaching English, but I would have gone into that field of journalism. But like I say, everything came too late for me. I was born at the wrong time. That's true. I read an article about someone who said that same thing, and I said, well, that's true of me. I was born at the wrong time. You know, everything happened after, just a little too late for me. Like Taylor Thomas, well, he got his good position, see? He got it later. But it was too late for me.
What job did you retire?
In the library.
Okay.
The library. Mm-hmm. Main library.
You have any more questions?
Okay.
I have any more questions.
Okay.